This is The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. In a few minutes, we'll be talking about your news consumption and are we getting collective news indigestion and what to do about that. But first, there have been 19 arrests of Bexar County deputies since the start of the year. 10 of the arrests have been for violent crimes. Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar is taking the step to hire a staff psychologist to deal with the problem. I spoke to Sheriff Salazar about it yesterday afternoon.
We're talking about a very specialized field, the way I see it, because we're looking for a police psychologist, which is very, very specialized. And let me tell you why. A police psychologist is going to help, of course, first and foremost in our organization, with screening applicants as they come in. It's, you know, no secret that when people are becoming a law enforcement officer, you need to make sure that they're in it for the right reasons and that they're mentally able to handle the stresses of the job. They can also, where a police psychologist can help out, is of course at very key processes within the sheriff's office anyway. So the way we'll be utilizing ours is, of course, you know, there may be already, by the time we hire this psychologist, there may already be people in the pipeline, so to speak, that have made it through the academy to that point, but we're going to set it to where they won't clear probation without speaking to this psychologist yet again, another point in the process. The reason that becomes important is, of course, they'll be screened as an applicant, but then by that time, they'll have gone through an 11-week academy, and they'll have spent several months in the jail environment, working around inmates. You know, to some of these folks, that may be completely foreign to them, and I want to make sure that they, again, some of the things that they've seen and heard and been exposed to by dealing with inmates on a daily basis, that they are still in the right frame of mind. And so we won't let them clear that probationary period until they've had another screening with the psychologist. In addition to that, existing deputies, you know, maybe after a long, or not maybe, after an officer-involved shooting, will be required to talk to a psychologist. To me, that is just a necessary function of what they do as psychologists. I don't consider it a luxury. That's something that we have to do, absolutely.
The San Antonio Police Department is on the record saying that they have 3 police psychologists on the job already.
Yes, sir.
Is that how they utilize their psychologists?
That is, and I'll tell you, so having come from the SAPD and working with those 3 psychologists at length, I know what a lot of their job consists of, and so, sure, I'm basically adapting that pattern to the sheriff's office somewhat. There'll be some additional job duties here that they don't have to have at the SAPD. You know, let me tell you some of the other things that I plan on utilizing the psychologist for. Of course, they'll be doing their fair share of teaching at the training academy to talk about stress management, self-care when it comes to the officers. You know, how to deal with those stressors on your own. But also, I plan to have these psychologists, or this psychologist, much like the ones at the SAPD, deploy with our negotiators if and when they get a standoff or a SWAT situation. So they have got just an array of skill sets that are required of a specialized police psychologist that I'll be utilizing this person quite a bit.
Is there a certification as a police psychologist, or are there classes or some school that mints these individuals?
No, we actually ask that, and I don't know that there is, but what there is, of course, and what we're looking for extensively is experience. So, you know, we're not looking for that, quite frankly, we're not looking for that person that's fresh out of college and just got their PhD or their doctorate. We're looking for that experienced law enforcement psychologist that has already done their fair share of what it is that we're expecting them to do in the field.
Now, the reason that you're looking for this psychologist, is it directly your cause and effect from the fact that there's been so many people in the sheriff's department who have had run-ins with the law?
Well, I'll tell you, there's several reasons for it. Yes, it's one of the reasons, but, you know, when I first came into office, you know, I start taking stock of some of the things that exist and some of the things that don't. You know, I come from a major organization at the SAPD. They've got what I consider to be many of the right tools to do the job. And so when I came here and found out we did not have a staff psychologist, that was a red flag to me. That was it was disturbing, I guess, that we didn't have that on staff. And I knew that was a tool that we needed. So we may do, you know, for example, we've had officers or deputies involved in shootings since I became sheriff. and we needed a psychologist to clear them before, at least in my mind, the way I'm used to doing things, we needed a psychologist to clear them for full duty once they were, to make sure there were no ill effects from that shooting. And so what we did was, not having one on staff, we started contracting with the SAPD psychologist on her, well, one of them on her off-duty time, and just paying her as a vendor. So, you know, we recognized the issue, and then when we started seeing this latest turn of events where we had several deputies being arrested, while we don't know all of the causes just yet, I'd have to say, at least in some aspects, maybe we could have headed some of this off at the pass by screening our applicants a little bit better. Maybe it was something that could have been caught before we got to the point where we did with some of these folks. So, you know, I just, from the beginning, I think it's just something that we, a law enforcement agency this size, doing business in the 21st century, it's something you have to have. But yes, this certainly did help in that decision-making process.
So we're at a point now with 19 of your deputies who've been arrested since the start of the year. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of hit the point now when the media's like, there's another deputy who was arrested. It's got to be taking its toll on the morale of everyone in your department.
It absolutely is taking its toll on everybody in the agency. So, you know, I do make the rounds and I talk to deputies and I just remind them that, look, while this very minuscule minority of deputies has crossed the line and gotten themselves in trouble with the law, the public knows, and I reassure my deputies of this, the public knows that it's not everybody. Granted, some people just look for a reason to paint us all with the same brush, and some of those people, you're never going to win them over. But the vast majority of the public, I think, can actually see through that and see that it's a very small percentage of deputies in the great scheme of things. I mean, granted, one is too many, but I have, and I mention this at every chance I get, I've got in the neighborhood of 1,500 deputies that come to work every day and don't get themselves in any trouble, and they do exactly the job that they were put into office to do. And I have to constantly remind the public of that. By that same token, I need to constantly remind the troops that, look, keep your heads up. The public is not blaming us all for this, and keep doing the job. The minute we let ourselves become distracted by social media or what's being portrayed in the media, we could get ourselves hurt, and that's the last thing we want. So keep your mind, keep your head in the game, and make sure that that you know you're portraying yourself to be that strong, peacekeeping individual that we need you to be.
And there's extra scrutiny now on your department.
Absolutely there is, and that's okay. I welcome it. People are free to scrutinize me all day long. I'm the leader of the organization. I take my role seriously. While I may not have created this issue, it's mine to clean up now, and the public needs to know that I'm going to continue to do that. So there's been a whole lot of emphasis put on that number of deputies that have been arrested to this point. I could tell you that I fully expect that number to go up. We've got a proactive approach to this. I created the Public Integrity Unit from scratch for just that reason. Again, it was something that didn't exist in its current form when I came in, and that bothered me, that we didn't have a unit dedicated to actively seeking out and investigating criminal allegations against our own personnel. So I created that unit from scratch. I also increased the size of my internal affairs unit, and I did that for a reason as well. It wasn't the size that it needed to be for a law enforcement agency this size doing business in the 21st century. Both of those things bothered me, so I fixed it. Now, when you have two dedicated groups of officers devote themselves to actively seeking out misconduct and holding people accountable, if you're doing that actively, you're going to find it. And then it's up to you to hold those people accountable, which is exactly what we've been doing. So at this point, it wouldn't surprise me if the number went up. Of course, every day, I hope that it doesn't, but I'm realistic also. If you're looking for it, you're going to find it.
Bexar County Sheriff Javier Salazar is hiring a staff psychologist after a number of deputies were arrested. 19 have been charged since the start of the year. When we come back from the break, should you go on a news media diet? This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. Staying on top of the news is part of being a good citizen, but what happens when your media diet is making you sick? It doesn't help that our brains are programmed to pay attention to the constantly changing stimuli, and we are constantly scanning the world for threats. So that breaking news alert, that presidential rage tweet, the bombshell guilty plea deal, attacks on refugees and families at the border, it's a wonder with all that news hitting us all the time that we're able to function at all. But what's all this overstimulation doing to us? How do we turn that back down from, dial it down from 11 to 3 or 4, whatever we feel comfortable with? if that's possible at all. What's your media consumption doing to you? How do you cope? What's your media habit? Have you thought about doing a self-media audit? Call in. We want to hear from you. 210-614-8980. 614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. And you can tweet at us at @tprsource. We're joined this hour. Mary McNaughton Cassiel is a clinical psychologist and professor at UT San Antonio. She studies how the news affects our stress levels and our well-being. Also with us is Sierra Felucci, executive editor of Parenting Content for Common Sense Media. And Tessa Joles is the president of the Center for Media Literacy. Welcome, all of you. More media overload as we talk about media overload. So let me go to Mary. This is your area. You study how news affects our stress levels and our well-being. What are you doing about it?
I started studying this right after the Oklahoma City bombing because I realized that the tenor of the news coverage was so vivid and real that you didn't even have to know anybody who was harmed to be scared or to be upset or to be anxious. So what I've started recommending since that time is that people think very closely about how they consume news, why they're consuming it, and how it's affecting them so they can make conscious choices about it.
How does that impact a person?
My research and other folks show that, you know, when you hear something that is in close to real time, when you see pictures that are live, it is hard to separate the reality from what's going on in your own life. And so people can get caught up in these stories. An example I give is the 11 soccer players that were stuck in the cave in Thailand. None of us knew them, but people around the world were living through it emotionally. That's the way our stress responses in our brain work.
It used to be that any one story that we would have on a day would have been enough to fill the news cycle for a week or even longer. Something like this, arbitrarily, I'll just pick this item. Yesterday, President Trump lifts the classification on certain items in regarding to the Mueller investigation. Just that one act in and of itself, or pardons or other things, that would have been enough to make everyone just go banana pie for a week. That will occupy the news cycle for maybe a couple of hours until something else comes along. It really does feel like that if you aren't paying constant attention, you're going to miss things.
And that is true to a degree, but I would argue that you have to think about what it is you're missing and whether each of these details is important. Part of the problem is in the past, it was an issue to get information. When you had to transport newspapers, when people didn't read, when things were censored, you were struggling. So now we look at the news as though it's giving us information we might need for our own success or survival or well-being. But as you said, there's a glut of information. There are multiple sources, radio, TV, the internet, all trying to fill 24 hours worth of coverage and to get out ahead. And so there's become sort of an expectation that they will clamor for our attention and they'll be catastrophic and sensational in order to draw us away from all of the other things we could be paying attention to.
Sierra Felucci, executive editor of Parenting Content for Common Sense Media. What do you, are you noticing this as well?
Oh, absolutely. I deleted Facebook off of my phone and took a little news break somewhat recently because I was noticing how just kind of mentally exhausted I was feeling by all of the constant, you know, chatter and information overload. And I think, you know, at Common Sense, we're focused on kids and families' well-being. And so it's something that I talked to my kids about, you know, as I was going through it in an attempt to kind of role model the experience for them. So they could know that when they start to feel overwhelmed by what's going on, all the notifications that are pinging on their phones and everything like that, that they can actually take real action to tune in to how they're feeling and respond to that by, you know, changing the notification settings on their phone or, you know, choosing not to turn on the radio at a certain time or whatever.
Tessa Joles, president for Center for Media Literacy. Do people need to have a better understanding about how some cable channels particularly are manipulating them to keep them in this hyper state of arousal?
Well, absolutely. We all really need to understand that media is created for purpose. It's created to get our attention.
Well, it's created to make money.
Absolutely, for power, for profit. And so understanding that goes a long way to reminding us of who's really in charge. And ultimately, we, the audience, are in charge of ourselves and also, in a sense, of what the media propagates, because media can't be successful if we're not tuned in.
Right, but these media channels do things that are very Pavlovian. You know, they hit the gong and run the graphic saying breaking news. They will tell you don't trust the other media channels. Only theirs is the one that is fair. And they will also, you know, they program you to, in order to watch their programs and ignore everyone else's. This is in order for them to have a robust portfolio and able to demand the most for advertisers and get the most eyeballs. I mean, this is you people who, you know, are being manipulated in order to watch these programs, Tessa.
Well, and that's why it's so vital that everyone develop media literacy skills, because critical thinking is really at the heart of being able to step back, being able to see media for what it is, and also to understand how that purpose is driving all of us. And so we really have to be equipped to make good decisions about our everyday use.
Mary McNaughton, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say that psychologically, we are swayed more by emotion than thought. And so when we have this never-ending array of negative information, one of the things we do is we overestimate how bad situations are, how bad the world is. There's research that shows that if you ask people, no matter where they live, an upper middle class neighborhood or a very poor area, they have good things to say about their neighborhood because they see both sides of it. They see the good teachers as well as the gangs. But when you're judging based only on the media and it's about somewhere you've never been, you will tend to say, well, that's a horrible place. I'd never go to New York or wherever else, because the negative stuff is what rises to the top.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. Do you feel like you are dealing with information obesity or information indigestion? So much of your consuming of all of this news, is it impacting your overall mental health? Let's go to Raj. And Raj, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Mr. Davies, thank you for taking my call. I was a journalist on air local news television for the better part of a decade, close to a decade actually, and on the East Coast as well as here in San Antonio. And I recently just got out of the industry about a year and a half ago. And I can tell you, behind the curtain, there are some frustrations for journalists as well when it comes to what we're instructed to provide as content. Mostly it's volume, but it sort of kind of tends to beg the question, well, are we considering what the audience is consuming at all, or are we just giving them a trough to eat out of? And that's one of the reasons why I got into the industry myself, is because it's the principles are laid out in J school, journalist school, and it just feels like it's a business after a while. Thanks for taking my call.
All right, Raj, thank you for calling in. Appreciate that. So Sierra Filocci at the Common Sense Media, there, you know, when you work on the other side of the camera or of the printing press, you know, you're told you're creating a product to be consumed.
That's absolutely right. And I think that we have to help kids understand what that product is and how it's being sold to us. Just like Tessa was mentioning, that media literacy is so key as a tool that kids and families and adults can use to help understand how everything is being packaged and what the techniques are that are being used to catch our attention. And then, you know, just I wanted to mention for kids, you know, the news is not always a healthy thing for kids to be exposed to, especially for kids under the age of about 7 or so, when they can't really understand the difference between reality and fantasy. I think that as parents, we need to keep our kids away from the news under that age. And then as they get a little bit older, you know, use some of these media literacy skills to help them interpret what's going on.
So I don't know about that. Let me go to there's a lot going on right now. These are historic times. If a kid is about 6-7 years old, they should at least know who the president is and why these are such interesting times, and that they should develop some awareness of what's going on. So, Mary, any thoughts?
As a clinical psychologist, I would say the same thing I say to a family when there's something negative going on. Someone's been diagnosed with cancer or perhaps even died. Not telling them anything leaves them open to misinterpretation and hearing rumors, but you need to explain it to kids at the level that they can understand it. So you don't want to give them all the nuances. And especially for younger kids, I'm going to agree that you want to make sure that they understand that they are safe, or they can separate their safety, their home, their school from things they see in the news, because younger kids can't always do that.
I remember when I was a kid, the Watergate hearings came on, and they blocked out Captain Gus, and we were bummed out about that. My father made us sit down and watch the Watergate hearings, even though we had no idea what was going on. He told us this was history, and you need to watch this. Let's go to Chris. He's on the line. Chris, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello, guys.
Hey.
I just wanted to make a comment that I think ignoring the news is actually a very bad thing. It leaves open the ability for those that want to mishandle our government. It just leaves it open to them. And if we don't keep an eye on the folks, if we listen to this bad press thing, it's just going to end us.
Chris, thank you for the call. Tessa Joles at the Center for Media Literacy.
Yes, definitely. We do need to be tuned in. And at the same time, we all need to be informed. That's all part of the role of media in a democracy. So there has to be that relationship. We've worked with children from a very young age, preschool age, and it is amazing what they can understand. And so these skills can be taught from a very early age. And that's essential, providing that foundation so that the children and adults, of course, too, really understand how media work and how to actually process and deal with the media.
But how do we explain Stormy Daniels, Tessa?
Well, I think the point made earlier about appropriateness is definitely important, because our children are exposed to everything. All you have to do is, you know, have the radio on in the car, and you realize that there isn't much that's a secret anymore in terms of the news and the news cycle. So we do have to be prepared, and we have to prepare our children.
We're talking about our media diet. Is it making us sick? We got to consume media to be informed. How do we make sure that we're getting the right stuff, the right proportion of things, avoiding some of the junk food, so that we can not be overwhelmed and make ourselves miserable all the time? We're going to have the conversation continues right after this break. We invite you to call in with how you're dealing with it. 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The Source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about your media diet and if it's making you sick. In August, we did a program on The Source about stress in America. Vail Wright, a clinical psychologist, was talking about a survey that was done by the American Psychological Association. The survey was called Stress in America, and this is one of their findings.
What we found in our survey was that 59% of adults said that this is the lowest point in our nation's history, that they can remember. And that actually spanned across generations. So everybody from older adults who lived through World War II to millennials and Gen Xers living through 9/11, everyone is feeling this national stressor. And so one of the recommendations we make to individuals is to put some boundaries around the information that you're taking in. Whether it's social media or whether it's the news, it's important to stay informed. We encourage people to stay informed. But for most of us, we don't need to know the breaking news at all times. We can get an hour of news over our lunch and then kind of let it go the rest of the day. And those are some of the ways that we encourage people to be active, to not be passive and just let all these stressors kind of overwhelm you, but instead make choices, make decisions about how much you're going to take in, when and where.
So Mary McNaughton, she's a psychologist at the UT San Antonio. She studies how the effects of news on our stress levels and our well-being. There seems to be, like right now, though, the stakes are so high. It's not like we're talking about something that far removed from impacting our lives, and these are things that we care about. How do we make that distance? How do we make those choices?
I have several comments. First of all, students tell me all the time that this is the worst time in American history, and I'm always happy to point out that we had a civil war once. We don't remember it, but
I wouldn't be happy to point that out, but yeah, it's a real thing. It happened.
It may not be the worst time. We need to maintain perspective. The difference in the past is that people were just as adamant about their beliefs. They argued. Politicians said horrible things, but we didn't have the technology to repeat them over and over and replay them at the top of the hour. And the way the brain works, the more you hear, the more familiar something is, the more you come to believe it, whether it's actually accurate or not. The second piece is
hang on for 1 second. Mm-hmm. Since you look at the newspaper coverage of Lincoln's election and also the period before the Civil War, the thing called the Texas Troubles, mm-hmm. and the rumors and the way people were acting at the time, that there was a constant and a designed media misinformation campaign not that different than what we're experiencing today, happening in the 1850s leading up to the Civil War.
Absolutely. And also the Spanish-American War. I mean, this argument about what's true, what's false, who is accurate has always gone on, but the technology has changed the spread of information. Everyone here is...
They were having that exact same argument at the time, because this is the telegraph and the spreading of news mm-hmm. was so much different. So everything is scalable.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, are we really experiencing something totally brand new? Well, maybe not. And it led, and the result at the time was an American Civil War. So this is not just talking about our own well-being. We're talking about the collective well-being of the national consciousness.
And that's where the things that the folks from media literacy say are so important. We have to be critical thinkers about what's being said to us and why, but also why are we reveling in it and listening to it constantly? For some people, it's anxiety. They feel like they're going to miss something. For other people, it's confirmation of what they already believe, or it allows them to feel in control. But the point is that if you listen to the news nonstop, which many Americans do, they have it on in the background, it can make you feel abnormally negative and pessimistic about how things are.
And Tessa Joles, president of the Center for Media Literacy, you know, the more people know about how the media works, then maybe the better they can be at assigning some weight to what they're being told.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, there's research that's been done on media literacy and its effectiveness as an intervention strategy that shows that through media literacy and through people's developing their critical thinking skills when they're producing and consuming media, that we can definitely and positively impact people's knowledge, their attitudes, and their behaviors, and that aggression levels actually rise more slowly, for example, in middle school children when they've had media literacy education as part of their curriculum.
Let's go back to the phones. Chip is on the line. Chip, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. I really appreciate how carefully you have tap danced around the definition of media literacy as opposed to well, politicalization. You talk about a seven-year-old. I grew up with three black and white channels, an MIA, a body count, kill ratio. You know, I was 7 years old, and I was shocked by the media in those days. But I was taught to be discriminant about the media that I consumed. I'm sorry that it's gotten to the point where it's a 24-hour news cycle, because there has to be a point where you realize that the politics are not the only thing that's happening in your life.
All right, Chip, thank you for the call. I'm going to go straight to the caller, Bree. And Bree, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. What I wanted to comment on is, I think for all media, whether it be liberal or conservative, need to keep their opinions to themselves. That's where I think a lot of problems are occurring, is that they're giving their opinions, and it's caused a rivalry. And, you know, I'm a conservative, and I do listen to other news besides Fox, but I think clearly the mainstream media is very liberal, and I don't think anyone would question that.
I think
to each their own opinion. And I think all other media besides Fox, maybe a couple of others, are liberal. I listen to everything. I don't just shut myself off to one media source. However, I'm in my 60s, and I think that the news we grew up with was reported. It wasn't a bunch of people hashing and verbally bashing what's going on and, what's being said. And so that's my opinion. That's what I've been wanting to say, and I'm so happy that I was able to get in.
Well, I'm glad you called.
I think that all media needs to just report and not start, giving their opinions. That's where the problems are occurring. And I think that's very important for our kids and our grandkids, that they need to see news, I think, as we once saw it.
Okay. So to her comment about, is this opinion or is this fact or is this, there is certainly a lot of opinion out there, but certainly most of it has been labeled as these are our analysts and Mary, with Mary McNaughton at UTSA, can you tell me more about, how that weighs in?
And it's a horribly hard thing to separate, because although we think that the news was more objective, they were still picking what stories to put on, what emphasis they gave them, how they focused on it. If you go back to the 60s, you can look at the arguments about how the racial issues and the Vietnam protests were covered. So there's always been some bias in what we see, but I do agree that some news stations are blurring that line between reporting facts and having people give their commentary, and we need to be clear on that. But that, again, is a media literacy question.
So, Sierra Filocci, can you talk about that, about opinion versus fact reporting? Is that something that you see as part of what you're looking at with parental content for common sense media?
Yeah, sure. I mean, first of all, I would like to commend the caller on being very mindful about choosing a variety of news sources. I think that that's really important, and even if you're coming from a specific ideology, it's important to kind of use your critical thinking skills to really analyze news from a variety of perspectives. It's important to check in and see what folks are saying on, a more liberal or a more conservative news site to kind of understand and what's out there and get outside of your news bubble. We all know that, social media has helped contribute to us kind of being in our own bubbles and not really hearing from people who have different opinions. But back to your point, I would just echo that this is a media literacy issue. Helping kids understand the difference between opinion and factual reporting is very important But also understanding that everyone comes to their job with their own personal bias. And as, you know, folks with journalism training, I mean, I went to journalism school. You work very, very hard to separate out your individual bias from the facts. But we're all people. We're all humans. And, you know, we can do our best, but we definitely bring with it a bias. And that is, you know, furthered by kind of institutional bias, right? So Fox News is going to have a specific perspective and put people on the air who are going to please their audience.
Right. So, and when it comes to picking what you're going to watch, you may say, well, do I want to hear the truth or do I want something to reaffirm what I already believe to be correct and right? And that's how people get this echo chambers, which is part of our media diet. And, you know, people need to be mindful of that. We'll talk about that when we come back from the break. If you want to call in, the number is 210-614-8980. The Source continues right after this break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about your media diet, what you're consuming for your news and information on a daily basis could be making you sick, could be causing you additional stress. How do you continue to be informed? How do you make sure that you know what's going on and you're able to make good decisions at the ballot box without being overwrought with so much of hyperventilation and opinion? What are you doing? How are you coping with that? 210-614-8980. We got an email from Robert. How I control my media input. Step one, block anything that is shared without comment on by my friends on Facebook. Detoxify my feed very rapidly and allowing me to focus on what my friends wanted to say and not just what they wanted me to know. Step two, no TV news. Nothing is covered in real depth. And step three, find and read multiple news sources for collaboration. Since doing this, my media diet is much leaner and much more nourishing. Let's go to the phones with John. And John, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm a daily listener and I'm a millennial. So I've kind of grown up in this changing media environment that we have right now. And it seems to me that until we have more publicly funded media options available, like TPR, NPR, PBS, that we're stuck with this echo chamber that you've been discussing because of the profit incentive in building these totemistic groups between liberal, conservative. You know, you continue to reinforce the beliefs of the individuals that are already tuning in. You've created this profit incentive to continue doing that. And until we remove that and allow public media to present facts rather than this blurred line between editorial and journalism, we're just going to continue to perpetuate that in our society.
All right. I appreciate you calling in with that, John. Sierra Filocci, executive editor of Parenting Content for Common Sense Media. Is there a distinction between public media and commercial media?
Well, I mean, I think the main distinction is one is a business that needs to make money, and one is a nonprofit where money is not their primary goal. Information is. So I think there is quite a big difference there.
Still, we have to, you know, fund, got to keep the lights on. But we worry often about the, you know, the tyranny of the click. You know, there's if the vapid is going to outcrowd the serious in news, people are going to click more on a story about the Kardashians and not click on one about climate change. And we have content creators who look at that and they're going to make, you know, decisions based on that. So Mary McNaughton, how is that a problem?
I think it is a problem, but I think there's also a psychological principle at work. If something upsets you repeatedly, one of the things we do is avoid it. You don't touch a hot stove constantly. And I think some of these topics, like climate change, are so scary and anxiety-provoking that people just want to shy away from them and hope they'll go away. What I've been arguing with my college students is that's not effective. It's not going to change the problem. But you have to discriminate between fixing climate change overall and what you personally can do. So maybe you want to do something local that addresses an issue you care about, which increases your sense of control. It gets you away from sitting around listening to media, and it gives you the sense that knowledge can translate. It's not just something we talk about and don't do anything about.
Right. So Tessa Joles, president of Center for Media Literacy, is taking action, a way for people to feel better about this media overwhelm. Because a part of the feeling is that I can't do anything about this world, but volunteering, giving money to certain causes, does that help?
Absolutely, it helps, because we're talking about empowering people to make better decisions for themselves. And that empowerment also translates into action. So when people have an opportunity to discern and to really think about the choices that they have, then I think it does prepare them better to make the decisions about how involved they want to get and what possibilities are open to them.
But back to the phones with Annette. Annette, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yes, hello. Thank you for having me. I just wanted to point out that a little bit of mindfulness can go a long way, especially with children. So in other words, you know, when the news are so good at basically telling us, well, if, you know, A and B happens, then Z and D is surely following. And so I think it's important to teach children to kind of say, hey, take a deep breath and really reflect. What does this actually mean to me right now, today? And will these other things really necessarily follow? And if so, what can I do about it? So I really think that cuts down on that fear factor that, oh, if this, then that. And that, I think, is actually what causes the anxiety in most folks.
Annette, thank you for the call. Let's go over to Andrew. Andrew, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I called to say that at some point a little while ago, the lack of compassion and empathy in both the media and people consuming it became unbearable, and I checked myself into therapy after breaking a bone in my hand. And it was partially that, partially because it's inescapable. I like to use Facebook, and it's everywhere, and I couldn't find a way to shut it out.
Andrew, hope you're feeling better. Thank you for calling in and letting us know. Mary McNaughton, professor of psychology, people are out there. This is impacting their health.
It is. In my clinical practice, I have patients on both sides of the political spectrum who have found the last couple of years very stressful for different reasons. Part of it is that the watching the news on its own does not cause people to be clinically depressed or anxious in my literature. It does create a sense of malaise, a sense of apathy, a sense of sadness or feeling that things aren't going to get better. But I think those interact with other things that are going on in our lives. And of course, part of this is driven by our own future expectations. So hearing about a tariff war is not really just about China. All of us are thinking, is that going to influence me or my job or what I want when I want to buy a car? So there is that personal link you can't separate out. And I think what the caller said was smart was that he acknowledged that and he found a place to talk about it, to sort those out and to find some ways to manage the thoughts. Because the bottom line, life has always been stressful, but we are dealing with a different sort of stress because of the technology and the media and everything else.
Another caller, Al. Al, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. And I just want to give praise to a program like this that airs all of these different views in a format that is non-combative. And the fact that we live in a dynamic society and a wonderful country where we can raise these issues without the fear of a black sedan pulling up in front of our house and spiriting us away. I also think that we have control, and a lot of the callers have said that they feel a lack of control, but I have the ultimate control, and that's the switch. I can choose to turn it off or not read it and go out and get active and do something rather than sit and listen and be dictated to.
Al, thank you for the call. So Tessa Joles, president of Center for Media Literacy, turning it off, just say, okay, I've got the off switch, I can just turn it off. But, you know, we're kind of stuck into sort of a schema or a routine where we're watching all of this news. maybe we say, are they just telling me the same old stuff that I already know? Is this really news? Maybe, yeah, I can turn this off and I can go do something else. I mean, people just need to ask that question of themselves. Would that help?
Yes, because ultimately it is all of us who have the power over our own decisions, over the clicker, over the social media. And so in that sense, it's up to us to decide. And having that freedom is something that's very precious. So part of the effort to explore all of these issues is, you know, well, what is our power? How can we express it? How can we manage it? How can we act in our own best interest?
I wonder about what happens next. Say we return back to a period of stability for a while, but people are so accustomed to having all this style of coverage that's in this hyperbloviating kind of way and extra scrutiny, and whether or not whoever becomes the next guy in charge is going to get a fair shake, or we're going to keep going at them in the same manner. I know that's just a news question and something I worry about, but people really want to continue. They're hooked on this. It's like a drug for them, Sierra Filoci. Do you think they're getting that dopamine drive to keep watching?
Oh, absolutely. And, it's even more of an issue when you're talking about digital media. You know, our phones, our social platforms, I mean, they're really designed to keep us using the devices, using the platforms, all of those little notifications, all those little red circles. They tap into, our psychology, our brains, essentially, to make us keep clicking, keep scrolling, all of those things. So to go back to the mindfulness idea, I think, it's not just that we have a lack of willpower, it's also that these platforms, these companies are doing their best to keep us as engaged as possible. And so we have to actually use our power, to go into our phones, to our devices, to our social media platforms, and make choices. Sometimes you have to dig deep into the settings, but you can make choices about what kind of notifications you're getting, all of those things that you can set so that you get the kind of information that you
and
want.
Leave the phone out of the smartphone out of the bedroom. If you wake up and you're doing snow angels looking for your smartphone, then that's a red flag. I want to thank Mary McNaughton. She is a clinical psychologist professor at UT San Antonio, studying how news affects our stress levels. Also with us is Sierra Filoci, executive editor of Parenting Content for Common Sense Media. And Tessa Joles is the president for the Center for Media Literacy. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio.